Welcome to the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore. You can find me on Twitter at MattMoreCBS or at HP Basketball if you really like Scrubs GIFs, because Scrubs is going off of Netflix, and I'm freaking out a little bit because I watch that show all the time. Joining me is James Herbert at Outside the NBA. And James, I may have buried the Raptors a little too soon.
Just a little, just a tiny bit.
I'm never going to get over that, man. I've realized that there are just games, and this first round has been a good reminder of don't overreact to every game, and I knew that going in, but it was like, the results were so stark that you were like, oh, this fits so nicely into narratives. Just snugly slide into these nice, comfortable narratives, and it was amazing. And then game three, I'm still not over it because people were like, Raptors fans are like, yeah, what now? What now, huh? We came back against the sixth seed and almost blew a 25-point lead. How you like them apples? And I'm like, okay. But I can't.
They did win three in a row after that.
I can't get. I know, but I can't get over that game three. I just can't. I'm just like, that game was so bad.
You need to get over it.
It was so bad.
You need to get over it. You need to get over it. It happens. It happens to other teams. Like, the Grizzlies got completely destroyed by the Spurs in that game one, and then were, like, very good for the rest of the series. Their season is over. We can talk about that later. But that happened. Blowouts in the playoffs happen. And I think the thing about the Raptors that makes them a unique team is that when they look bad, they look freaking awful. But, like, we saw it last year in the conference finals. Them look like that same caliber of awful. Like, it was an extremely similar situation against a better team, a Cleveland team, and then win two games at home that, like, nobody saw coming.
I always just felt like, I always just felt, I, here's the thing. I really never really believed in those two games. I was like, okay, all right.
What does that mean? Like, they happened? They won the games?
I know, I never, here's the thing. There are games where one team wins and you're like, uh-oh, because this has happened to me before. Like, the Thunder in 2012, when they first knocked off the Spurs, there was, like, the back half of, I think, game two was when it happened. And I looked at it and was like, they found something. Like, this series is turning. And it
right.
Felt
and
really,
yeah, you didn't feel like the Raptors were going to come back and beat the Cavs. I don't think anybody thought that.
Like, I never thought that. I never thought
that. Part of their identity over the past few years is that they're resilient and that when they're bad, they're awful. And we've seen that. There are regular season games where the Raptors' offense just totally dies. And what we've seen in the playoffs is, like, there are moments where that happens, and it happens when they're trapped. It happens when the offense reverts into isolation play. And that's what their opponents try to do in every series since this core first got to the playoffs a few years ago and faced the Nets. That has been the plan, is to get the ball out of Lowry and DeRozan's hands, pressure them, and see if you can bait them into taking bad shots, or just see if you can get the shot clock down to 7 and have them panic and try to create something out of nothing against a longer defender, against a double team, or whatever. And there are moments where they move the ball properly, and they look really awesome, like they did for most of the regular season. And you saw that in their blowout win in game five. And you saw them for, like, most of three quarters in game six. And then right at the end again, just in time. And there are other times where they don't find that flow and they've still managed to win ugly. And I just think you have to kind of accept that part of the Raptors' experience is going to be sort of excruciating. And that's, like, it was hilarious to see, like, the game five Raptors and the game three Raptors in the same game in game six, but it's also kind of perfect, right? Like, that was a summation of the whole series to me.
It would have been if they lost. That's my thing. Is I'm like, I felt like if they lost that game, I would have been like, that makes sense. And then if they won in game seven, I've been like, yeah, that's the Raptors. Like had a 25-point
lead. That's the progress that they're making. This is the first time they've ever won a game in fewer than the maximum.
Okay, we have to stop this right now. That is not something to be proud of. Like, it's just not, guys.
No, of course it's not. I'm just saying it's progress.
For the Bucks, I'm not as I wrote kind of – you and I both wrote things about the Bucks last night.
Yeah.
I am not as the big thing that happens in these situations is we're always like – like, they're on the rise. Watch out for the Bucks. They're coming. And I'm like, man, I've been here. I have been here, and I have seen these teams, and I have seen them vanish. I have seen them disappear, because if next year they don't play as well, the defense sucks, Giannis gets hurt for a month, that's it. They miss the playoffs. That's the difference. Like, that's really the difference. Which is not to say that I don't think the Bucks' future is bright, because look, Giannis is good, Snell is good, Jabari Parker is good, Chris Middleton's good. Middleton's going to be a lot better. That dude was not healthy, and he was sick in the series. Like, Middleton was never right. They have all Thon Maker look great.
Also, please credit Norman Powell for playing great defense on him when they couldn't get anybody to get a stop on him earlier.
Yeah,
in the series.
Norman Powell was great in this series. We'll see what happens next series. And then all of these things, like all these guys are young and good and are going to get better, and they should continue to improve. Jason Kidd is really inconsistent as a coach. His great moments are amazing. His terrible moments are Raptors. So like all of these things. Like
we want to talk about John Henson suddenly appearing in the series.
I just want to know what happened to John Henson. Somebody needs to go get him. Like somebody go draft him, because it's like he's not done. Like that's ridiculous. Like he's still able to be an impact guy. I mean, like Denver should be throwing themselves to get John Henson and throw out Plumlee. Like that should be exactly what Denver does. But yeah, I think the Bucks are going to be interesting, and they're going to be good. Giannis is amazing, and Giannis's jumper. Yeah. I think Giannis's jumper is gonna come. I think it's gonna get there. Like there are flashes of it. You don't look at Giannis's jumper and are like, oh, that thing's just like that's Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Like that thing's never gonna be okay.
He swished a few different threes in this series.
Well, yeah. And it's just like looking at his form. You're like, oh no, that'll go. He just needs to work on it. That'll go. He'll figure that out.
And he has been working on it, and I think he has the right attitude.
Yeah.
And like, he didn't hesitate as much on them this year. He, like, took them when he was dared to, or sometimes took them just out of the flow of the offense. But, I get what you're saying. Like, these things don't always work out. You can look at the same Bucks team a few years ago when they made their first trip to the playoffs, and then the next year they disappointed everybody. So, improvement isn't always a straight line. Like, I think that's, like, whether we're talking about teams or whether we're talking about players, we have to remember, like, this isn't a linear thing. Like, there are bumps on the road. And nobody is guaranteeing the Bucks are going to be a top four seed next year. Like, that's just – like, they have serious issues in terms of spacing. Their defense, as great as it can look, is super inconsistent. And they were a below-average defensive team over the course of the season because, like – there are very obvious strengths and weaknesses to playing that aggressively. Like, they give up a ton of layups. They give up a ton of corner threes. Like, if they're not forcing turnovers, if they're not forcing teams to just, like, freak out and just lose all flow, then it doesn't work. And you saw that in the series. It was like that's what made them such an interesting matchup for the Raptors, was because they're a team that has two dominant ball handlers. And they rely on those guys, and then they rely on movement out of the pick and roll. And like when the pick and roll was basically shut down, and when those guys weren't going off, like it looked horrible. But when they were moving the ball, they got good shots pretty much whenever they wanted. So it's like they play style.
Here's my thing: why did the Raptors fall apart again? Like
I can't explain why they fell apart.
When they figured it out, I was like, oh, okay. Like they figured out how to beat this thing, and that's it. Like it is I knew this going in the whole year. I was like, oh, this is like a really bold thing, and it's probably smart that Kidd's doing this because it leverages what they're good at and mitigates what they're bad at. But on the other hand, I'm like, well, this is a one adjustment thing. Like once you get settled against that trap, you're done. Like you can't counter with the trap. That's the thing with it.
But I think when you see that trap with like a ton of energy and the arms that these guys have, like it's different. And I think you need to be really locked in. You need to be really disciplined. And I think, honestly, the Raptors started feeling good about themselves, and they started kind of running clock. Like, and you can't do that. Like, you can't relax for a second. And that's my best explanation. It's the sort of thing, like, looking forward, I think the formula is really interesting. I think the fit of these players, like, you could be looking at a starting five next year, potentially. I don't know if they'll go this way, and we don't know what they're going to do in the summer, but you could be looking at Brogdon, Middleton, Parker, Giannis, and Maker, which in terms of just size and length and quickness is insane.
Yeah.
And everybody should be extremely excited about Thon Maker based on this series. Like, the guy, like, I know we don't know what his real age is, but the fact is he was playing high school basketball last year. I know he looked a little bit more like a rookie when the series went on, But like he had his moments and he was locked in and he was super intense and he was not afraid to like go try to dunk on Ibaka and Valanciunas and like actually did both of those things. So I think like, yeah, you should be excited about the Bucks, but you can also be realistic about like, well, at a certain point they need more shooting. The Giannis and Jabari thing is like really fun, but if neither of them can hit a three, then it's going to be a problem. And like Monroe is in an interesting situation this summer. They have to pay Snell this summer. This could go a lot of different ways. And like we thought like, oh, hooray, they signed Mirza Teletovic last year. At least I did, because I was like, oh, he's going to like give them some spacing. And then he's like a total non-factor in this series. And in fact, like playing him in game two was probably a big mistake on Kidd's part.
Yeah. Probably. I'm already regretting my Cavs-Raptors pick. I've taken Cavs in five, which is clearly, again, tainted by that game three, because I'm like, if that team shows up against the Cavaliers, that one is going to be over very, very soon. I also don't... I was thinking about this morning. All right, DeRozan's better than JR.
Mm-hmm.
Lowry and Kyrie is awful close. Like, Kyrie's offense is a little more explosive, but his defense is garbage, and Lowry's defense can be solid, but his offense sometimes struggles in the playoffs. So
Lowry's back is hurt.
Yeah, so it's like a wash to me. Like, I think that's okay. I like to be like it's a wash. They lose the LeBron matchup, that's fine. You can lose the LeBron matchup, that's okay. Everyone loses the LeBron matchup. Love versus Ibaka is really compelling. Like, that one's really kind of...
It also could be Love versus someone else.
Right. And then, yeah, especially like if they go to Ibaka versus Thompson. Thompson's playoff, Tristan Thompson, is very good. And I have a hard time being like, what are the Raptors going to do? This is always the thing, and this is what it really gets down to, is DeMar DeRozan is amazing at what he does. He is a mid-range assassin. He is a great finisher at the rim. He is tremendous. He is able to draw fouls. He does all of these things, and it's great. At the end of it, at some level, it's just, oh, like we're just going to make him take mid-range jumpers, and he's going to make like 45% of them, which is good, but he's not going to be able to keep pace when we knock down 14 threes. Like, that's what it comes down to, is the Raptors' offense is going to lean heavily on a guy that's going to get 2 points,
but,
and they're going to create a bunch of threes. That's what's going to happen.
But the Raptors are, like, they're not a high-volume three-point shooting team necessarily, but they're a good three-point shooting team, and they're a team that, especially since the deadline, spaces the floor really well. And DeMar has become really good at setting up his teammates for three-pointers. Like, he's not the guy hitting the three, but he can totally be the guy creating the three, especially out of the pick and roll, but even when just, like, driving and kicking.
You have a lot of belief in him as a playmaker. You have, like, a lot of belief in DeRozan.
Well, I think he's taken a lot of steps. Like, I don't know. Maybe like this comes from being in Toronto for as long as I was, but like I just remember when he like basically couldn't dribble it at all and couldn't see the floor at all. And like there are still times when you watch him and you see a certain possession, you're like, why didn't you see that guy open in the corner? Like that still happens. Like he's certainly not James Harden. but like the progress he's made year after year in terms of being a pick and roll guy, and now he's one of the highest usage pick and roll guys in the entire league, which people did not see coming. Like that means something to me. And I've seen it, like he's had some really high assist games during this regular season. I thought for when the Raptors offense was flowing, a lot of it, it's a chicken and the egg thing. It's like, is it because everybody was in rhythm and cutting away from the ball and moving and there was proper spacing? Or is it because he was just willing to give the ball up more? I don't know whether it's because of him or it's because of the offense, but like when things were going well, he was getting rid of the ball quickly. He was seeing where the defense was coming. He was setting up his teammates. And I think that was the thing. Like I wrote this in my preview to the Bucks Raptors series, was like, he needs to sustain that improvement. Like what he was doing a lot of that when Lowry was out, cause he was the one that had to create so much offense. So he's not what I would call like an elite playmaker yet. And maybe he never will be, but it's like the guy can find shooters. And, like, the Raptors' offense, like, I think I was talking about this on a Raptors podcast with Sean Woodley of Raptors HQ last week. Like, people think the Raptors are just an isolation team, but they're really a pick-and-roll team. And they're based on having shooters everywhere and trying to create the best look. And, yeah, DeMar and Lowry are the guys that are handling the ball most of the time. But, like, there's a reason they've surrounded those guys with twos, threes, and fours, and even now Ibaka, when he's at the five, like, guys that can make threes. Like, I don't think the Raptors are just going to be, like, subsisting on a diet of mid-range shots in this series. Like, I don't think that's the point.
Here's, like, a funny, like, way to think about it. Okay, one, he has a second, he's, like, top five in secondary assists in the playoffs, and that's a very good sign. On the other hand, he has fewer assists, potential assists per game in the playoffs than Joe Ingles. And
Paul Ingles had an 11 assist game. Ingles is a good passer.
And Paul Millsap, but he also has more.
Millsap's also a good passer.
And okay, but again, like, good passer, great playmaker. Good passer, great playmaker. That's the difference. If you have the ball that much, you should create that more. Like, you just should. That's like the Westbrook thing is.
Right. I just think there's, like, this reputation he had from earlier in his career when people are like, oh, this guy's like Corey Maggette. He's going to do a straight line drive. He's going to get to the line or he's going to shoot. And he doesn't shoot threes. And he's not Corey Maggette. Like, that,
he made
that's
some really good passes.
That's what I'm pushing back against.
He made some really good passes last night. But there's a difference between, like, yeah, he can, like, get rid of the ball when he needs to. And, like, oh, he's going to find ways to punish teams and take advantage of it. And, oh, by the way, he's going to do that against the Cavs. That's, like, the gap.
Well, and that's when we talk about how good the Cavs defense is. And, like,
this is a great this is a great test for both sides, because the Raptors are not going to hit them with anything that's really hard to defend, and the Cavs are not going to hit them with anything that's really hard to beat. So it's the extremely movable object versus the very stoppable force.
But I don't even think that quite gets there, because I think, as we've been talking about with the Raptors, like, the big variable for them is, like, how well their offense is flowing, right? Like, when they look bad, it's because it just looks like this big disaster that's, like, they're the easiest team in the world to stop. And I think when you look at the other side, the reason why there's been so much anguish about the Cavs' defense is that we've seen it look great. Like, we've seen in the playoffs last year, when they absolutely had to be a good defensive team, they were. And it's not just against the Warriors in that series, which obviously was their best work defensively. But even before that, like, when they were blowing out the Raptors, it, like, they were doing the same stuff that other teams did to the Raptors and, like, making them really uncomfortable and, like, getting into passing lanes. Like, LeBron just, like, you know, LeBron knows the play the other team is running every single time down, and his anticipation is so good. He was making those, like, Draymond plays where he's just, like, jumping, he's just anticipating everything. And Tristan Thompson is, like, covering smaller guys and taking charges and blocking shots and doing everything. And that's what they were able to do for their four wins against Toronto last year. Like, that deep, like, they looked really great on both ends. But we've also seen them look awful on defense for a lot of the regular season, like the majority of it. And it wasn't even really that good against Indiana. So I think we're asking if the Raptors can be consistent finally on offense, and I think we're asking if the Cavs can be consistent finally on defense.
So Raptors in five.
I think it's kind of complicated.
So Raptors in five.
Raptors in five? Yeah, totally.
James took Raptors.
I picked before the playoffs started, I said Cavs in seven, and now it's like we had to make other picks, and I kind of forgot that I did that, and I emailed in Cavs in six, but I might switch back to Cavs in seven just for consistency. I haven't decided yet. The post isn't up. We'll see. But I'm picking the Cavs.
Raptors got to take one of the first two. They got to take one of the first two. And they are known to be great in game one, so that bodes well for them. So
I have to say, I'm against arbitrary they have to win X game, because I think – I mean, it was easy to – like, when it was down 2-1, I think most people said, yeah, they could win it in seven. And they ended up winning it in six.
The reason is they got to put them on their heels, because they're not going to find adjustments. They're not going to find adjustments to beat this team. It's not like the Thunder where they started figuring out different ways to, like, combat the Spurs. Like, the Raptors are not going to find that. They have to hit them in the mouth from the get-go in one of those first two games to get them off kilter, protect home, go up 3-1, insert joke, and then close. Like, that's what they have to do. Is like that to me is the model for how it's going to go.
How they can upset them? Yeah, I mean, that would make it a lot easier. But I would say if they are tied 2-2 after four games, regardless of how they got there, then I think they'll be happy with the position that they're in.
I mean, they'll have acquitted themselves, because if you go to six games versus the Cavs, you're able to be like, hey, we took the Cavs to, like, last year, like you just said, like, well, they took the Cavs to six games, even though everyone was like, yeah, six games. Never thought they were going to lose that series. Never thought that. But they shouldn't, because the Cavs...
No, and I mean, there is a difference between, like, a really close six games, yes, and a six games, yes, where four of them were blowouts. Yes. Absolutely.
Yes. We'll see. Maybe they'll surprise us, because they did make it out of the series, and they deserve credit for that. Memphis...
And they're better. Like, they're better than they were last year. Like, yeah, they have a better roster because of the moves they made at the deadline. And then I would argue there's been some internal improvement, too. I guess that's up for debate. But I would say certainly in the case of DeRozan, we've seen that.
How long does it take for LeBron to actually activate and be like, oh, PJ Tucker really does want to try and embarrass me. Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to destroy him and everything that he stands for and burn his entire career to the ground. And then we'll finish the rest of this. Like, how long is that going to take? Because I feel like it's going to happen by game two, where LeBron's going to be like, oh, you really want to do this? Like, this is what you actually want to do.
Well, I mean, Tucker is going to be physical. He's going to be right up in his face. He's going to basically be like Tony Allen. He's going to try to annoy him. And I think you could see LeBron get him in foul trouble. You could see some technical fouls. You could see a flagrant foul. Like, nothing is off the table there. That's just the kind of defender that Tucker is. And, I mean, you saw it against Giannis. Like, that was intense. But, you know, it won't be just him. Like, I don't even know if they're going to start him. I think they absolutely should. But if they don't, I mean, you'll see Carroll guarding LeBron. You'll see Patterson guarding LeBron.
Just put Norm on him. Just put Norm. Norm can do it.
I mean, he spent some possessions guarding him last year. Not many. I don't think that's a wise idea. As much as you know I love Norman Powell, I don't think that's a wise idea.
Hey guys, I want to tell you about SeatGeek, the easiest way for you to find tickets to all those playoff games you want to catch, and I'm going to tell you how you can get $20 back just by listening to this podcast. Okay, SeatGeek is the smartest way to find tickets for all those games that you're trying to catch. There's nothing like being in the building, and SeatGeek gets you there. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. I used it the other day to buy some concert tickets, and by far, it's the easiest way I found to find basketball tickets and all the other tickets. I was using it the other day to actually look it through and see, like, what the prices were for various big game sixes, and it was incredible the kind of tickets that you could find on SeatGeek compared to other sites. You can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, you're going to get the seats that you want for any game. You're always going to get the best deal, because SeatGeek price compares across multiple sites. Those prices are going to vary, but SeatGeek is going to find you the best one. And they're going to grade it. They're going to find out which tickets are the best, and they're going to let you know which tickets get you the most bang for your buck. And every ticket on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop with confidence. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Here's all you got to do. Download the SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code IEYE, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made that first purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code I today. The Grizzlies were eliminated last night. They face a really interesting summer. My gut feeling, this is not based off of intel, this is just my gut, is that Jamichael Green is retained, Zach Randolph is retained, and Tony Allen, unless he takes a minimum, is gone.
Really?
There's just a lot of factors that play into that.
Do you think there's a scenario where they all stay?
Yeah, there's a scenario, but it requires a lot of moving parts. I think this team, Marc Gasol was making comments today, and he kind of knows, he said he knows the same thing, which is what I was saying last night, which is this team would have been the 4 seed and probably would have just beaten the pants off of the Jazz or the Clippers if they had just not screwed around as often as they did versus the Nets and the Sixers and the Wolves and whoever. Like, their series against San Antonio was validating of what I kind of said all year, which is, like, they're going to be better in the playoffs, but you have to
They beat good teams throughout the season.
You have to get out of that spot. You can't face San Antonio in the first round. You just can't. Yeah. And maybe that all that would have done is they would have lost in the second round. But it matters, and that you have to give yourself that opportunity where, especially, like, you're hoping for the Spurs to be worn down, because Houston's getting a much different team than they would have gotten in the first round, because the Spurs are now like, ow. Like, LaMarcus Aldridge is like, I've been fighting Zach Randolph for six games. Tony Parker's like, I've been getting screened by Marc Gasol for six games. Kawhi Leonard's like, my hands are blistered from how hot my shooting is. He has a 78% EFG.
I mean, I don't even know what to say anymore about him. Like, I don't know what to say. Absurd. Like, Pop called him the best player in the league last night, and I was like,
yeah, are you?
I mean, like, I don't, like, I was just like, I don't know that I'd say it, but like, I don't know
you're wrong.
I don't, yeah. I would never argue with it right at this point. Like, it's just, sure, all right.
Can't say you're wrong. So, their summer's going to be very interesting. You know, they could let the Michael Green go and try and find some options elsewhere.
He's good, though.
People are going to say Parsons is done. I'm not there. I'm just not.
Me neither.
Like, Parsons is going to have to retire before I'm like, oh, he's done. Because I've seen guys come back. Now, I've seen guys like Derrick Rose who are never the same, and that's fine. But if Chandler Parsons just comes back as a spot-up shooter, that's all they need. They just need somebody who isn't James Ennis. Ennis made some last night and throughout the series. But, like, this, I keep trying to harp on this. I'm like, they were going at Kawhi with Wayne Selden, James Ennis, and Andrew Harrison.
Vince.
Like,
and Vince.
And Vince. That was their lineup to go against Kawhi. This next series, I wrote a big breakdown on it on CBS Sports with all my thoughts on Rocket Spurs. I am flying to San Antonio on Sunday. I am very excited to cover this series. It is going to be epic. I have Rockets in six. I think they have the weapons. I think we saw in the first round. The first round was, oh, the Grizzlies really are better than we thought they were. And it was a lot of like, oh, like the Spurs collectively are very good. The Spurs individually are exploitable. And that's the difference, is if you can exploit their individual stuff, you can start to hurt them because they are more dependent on one player than they have ever been since like 2003. This is the most they have been dependent on one guy to carry them. Now, Kawhi can do it, but you can also, I think, I always go back on the question of, all right, do you do anybody but Kawhi in these situations? Like, anybody but the superstar? Or the superstar only, and he shut down everybody else? I really think if you're the Rockets, you're like, let's make Kawhi Leonard score 90 points. Like, we know we can score, right? We know we can score. So let's make Kawhi Leonard score 50 to 60 points a game. Like, let's make him score 40 plus realistically in order.
Yeah, because that's not really his nature.
Right.
Like, that's what teams used to try to do to Steve Nash.
Right. And so, like, really just be like, you know what, Ariza, you're going to get burned. It's going to be rough. Just try and deal with it. Make it through that. Ryan Anderson, do the best you can. Like, guys, just try and hang. Just try and hang.
Don't put Ryan Anderson on him.
He won't.
Please.
They won't.
I don't want to see that.
They won't. But they also don't. I mean, they don't have a lot of wing options. Like, they're limited in what they can do in that capacitor. Decker being out is painful for this. That's
might Decker come back though?
Maybe. And if he does, that could help a lot. But even then, even that doesn't matter. Like, Kawhi could burn anybody. That's the thing, is like, the Grizzlies had nobody, but it wouldn't have mattered. Kawhi was making everything, and he's going to continue to probably make everything. But I think if you're the Rockets, you're like, no. If we can just get our offense, if we can get our offense going, then we'll be okay. This is the moment.
I want to say,
go ahead. You go ahead.
No, go on. This is the moment. Keep going.
This is the moment that article I wrote in December, that's why I wrote that article. This moment right here is what I wrote that article about. It was about how the Spurs defense was way better when Kawhi was off the floor and what was going on. And there's a lot of debate about it. And, like, there, I don't think that there's one answer to that question. There's a lot of analytical stuff that suggests that it's just three-point variance. And maybe that's the case. But I do know this. If you're the Houston Rockets, any time – because the Spurs do not put Kawhi on Harden the entire time. They wear him down with Green and then lock him down with Leonard at the end. It's the same thing that the Cavs do with LeBron, where somebody else takes him for three quarters and LeBron comes in and basically is a defensive closer. For those other three quarters, when Danny Green is guarding Harden and Kawhi is on Trevor Ariza or whoever floating, bury his ass in the corner. Bury him in the corner, attack LaMarcus Aldridge, Pau Gasol, and Tony Parker in the pick and roll. And the Rockets have advantages all over the place. They have shooters if you help. They have guys that can get to the rim. They can exploit David Lee. There are a number of things that they can do as long as Kawhi is not involved. And when they bring Kawhi out and they do that, that's when your secondary playmaker has to make plays. So when they put Kawhi on Harden and they switch Green onto Eric Gordon, that's when Eric Gordon's going to have to be like a facilitator and a playmaker.
That's why you have Eric Gordon. That's why you have Lou Williams. Exactly. Even Patrick Beverley can run pick and rolls. Yes.
Right. So there's all these weapons. Now, if the Spurs win, I'm not going to be surprised. No one's going to be shocked that the Spurs win. No. They are the effing Spurs. But I do believe that the Rockets have more weapons. I believe that they have things that can specifically... For years, I've said this. The Spurs have a hard time with hyper-athletic big men. They just bother them. Like, their scheme and their personnel is not built around leapers. It's not who it is. It's why Dwight Howard's crushed them. It's why other guys have had issues. And Clint Capella is another one that's had big games versus the Spurs over the years. I think Clint Capella is going to get his opportunities. And if they can't contain him, that's going to be a problem. I like Rockets in six.
Yeah, I took Rockets in six. And, like... I feel really nervous about it because, like, everything about this series feels like it's in seven games. Like, it's going to be seven games. Like, I just feel like it's going to be really close. I think it could be the best series that we see in the whole playoffs. I said that before the playoffs even started. And the thing was, is, like, I saw a lot of the same things you did. Like, I think I just love the amount of firepower that the Rockets have. And I look at the Spurs defense and it's been so good. But I'm like, you can exploit guys in the pick and roll, and that's all the Rockets do is run freaking pick and roll. Like, I think they can do it. And so, like, I'm like, okay, I'm leaning Rockets. And then I think, like, Rockets in seven, do I really think they're going to win that seventh game on the road?
No.
I don't know. I guess I'm going six then.
Yeah, that's so. I had the same process. I wrote that today. I had the same process where I was like, well, they're not winning in seven. If it's game seven, it's going to be Spurs Hornets 2008 all over again. And they're just going to, like, Manu's going to hit four threes. Like, that's what's going to happen. Game sevens come down to who shoots better, and the home team usually shoots better. That's like I have always believed that theory. That if you get to game seven, it's you've matched each other in matchups and X's and O's and performances, and you're at that seven game, and it's just somebody's going to make shots and somebody's going to miss. And the thing we've always known is home team shoot better. The end. Like, that's just what it comes down to. Unless it's Spurs Clippers, which was the greatest first round series maybe ever.
Unless it's LeBron chasing down a block and playing the best.
Yeah, that was a little bit different. That was I rewatched the final. Someone on YouTube, they have the final minute of action. So, like, the actual game clock 100 and everything that happened. I forgot that LeBron missed that free throw after Draymond fouled him. I forgot that LeBron was like acted seriously hurt after Draymond fouled him, whether he was or not, like, looked like he broke his wrist.
No, we were all like, it seemed like he was hurt.
Yeah,
it seemed like it was really bad. He stayed down a long time.
It seemed like, oh, this is Cleveland, this is like the Warriors. Like, that's what's going to happen. Is LeBron
too much stuff happened in a short period of time to remember it all?
Yeah, like LeBron broke his wrist and then he missed the free throws, but then he sinks one, and then like the Love possession. Like, I went back and I'm still just like, how did this happen? And I also went back and was just like watching the crowd, and it's weird because that crowd, there's no surrender cobra. Like, there's no freakouts in the crowd. They just stand there, and they're like, they just can't believe it's happening. Like, they're just still.
I mean, that was me at home.
Okay. Those two are gone. Tonight, the Chicago Bulls depart. Finally, you will be free of this
wretched
team.
You can't. You are cursing the Celtics as we speak.
I am not.
You can't be this confident. You can't be this confident.
How can I not be? Look, the thing is, I really do think it, like, I don't like giving teams excuses. It just bothers me, right? So, like, Curry last year when Steven Adams was really pressuring him on switches, I was like, I want to give Steven Adams credit. Like, he did well. I want to give that team that's not supposed to win the credit for doing something they're not supposed to. But I really think at this point, you have to just kind of think, like, the Celtics just weren't right after what happened with Isaiah's sister. Like, it really did just affect them that much emotionally. And they got over it, and they're better, and they figured out the small ball lineup, and I don't know any – I can't find any scenario where
– I have a scenario.
Explain it to me.
I have a scenario, and it's pretty simple. It's Jimmy Butler goes off. Like, if he was right in the last game, if he was himself – and I'm not, believe me, I love Avery Bradley. I'm not trying to take any credit away from him. He played fantastic defense. But I just think if Butler had, like, at any point in the game found some sort of rhythm offensively, it changes things. Like, that wasn't like that game is interesting. Like, I don't think the Bulls were totally out of it. And I think when he is really on form, when he's making shots, when he's acting like a point guard, as we've talked about before, like he could do that. Like when that's happening, there, like he can steal games on his own. And that's why it's like, yeah, all signs point to the Celtics winning. Like Isaiah has been awesome. Isaiah has been taking all sorts of hits and finishing anyway. And like the Celtics are the more talented team. They have way more shooting. They have way more of almost everything except for size and rebounding. Like they're the better team, of course. But I don't want to just dismiss the idea that Butler and like his health is a different issue, whatever. That he could take over and that he could have a big fourth quarter and that they could steal one, especially if they manage to out rebound them all night like they've done for most but not all of the series, and just stay physical. Like if it's close at the end, which like, yeah, it shouldn't be. The Celtics should win easily, but if it is, then like the Bulls still have Jimmy Butler and they still have your guy Dwayne Wade too.
Isaiah has been the best player in the series when it needed to be Jimmy Butler for the Bulls. Isaiah's played great defense the last couple of games. Mm-hmm. He's been excellent. Avery Bradley's been excellent. They have flipped the series. I do not see any way that it goes past this game. The Celtics advance in six, as I said originally, and then completely abandoned after they lost the first two games. the Wizards are the one team that I've had the most confidence in, so they're, of course, going to lose tonight. It's a road game. Jason Smith, I think, is questionable, which is big for them because they're already without Mahimi. I want to believe that the Wizards will take care of this. They should take care of this. They should have won in five. Like, this series should have been over.
I think the Hawks should have won the last game, though.
I disagree. The Wizards are better. The Wizards are a definitively better team. And, like, I'm going to not...
The Hawks were right there.
I'm not going to
stop...
They
were right there.
I'm not going to stop waiting for Dennis Schroeder to come back and realize that he's Dennis Schroeder. Like, that's going to happen at some point. But
not if the Wizards keep playing, like, 5 feet off of him, letting him just step into threes.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe not. Maybe the Hawks are like I said, like, I thought the Raptors were cooked. I thought the Celtics were cooked, and they're going to win their series. So probably the Wizards will wind up losing, and then we'll get Hawks Celtics, which is just going to be a disappointing. Like that's just
Al Horford's return to Atlanta. Matt, get psyched.
Yeah. Clippers Jazz.
I've been against making predictions about this the whole way. I don't know. It feels like it should go seven. I think. It's like I said last time we talked about this. Like, I think the Jazz are the better team now based on Blake Griffin being out and the Clippers not having enough depth and, like, the Jazz having a version of Joe Johnson that never misses. Like, Utah should win. But the Clippers fighting for their lives, Chris Paul with the ball in his hands, like, it feels to me like it could go seven.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't make it. I refuse to make a prediction. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have it. I have to do score predictions when I do my picks, and I have it.
Yes,
the Jazz are favored by 5.5. I have it. Jazz 101, Clippers 100, and the Clippers lose by a point. On
that is so heartbreaking.
On what will probably be a Chris Paul missed jumper, because that's like his life. I am begging you, Chris Paul, in the name of all that is holy, go to San Antonio this summer. For the love of all that is holy, go to San Antonio this summer. I wrote about it today in an article on the Clippers. I get why the Clippers want to keep this team together. That makes sense. And I get why Paul would want to stay for the money. That makes sense. But you're going to have hundreds of millions of dollars anyway. Like, that's not going to change. You will have hundreds of millions of dollars. It's how many hundreds of millions of dollars you have. And you're still going to have a lot of that. Go to San Antonio. They will make it to where you don't have to worry about everyone being in line, and you can just play, and you can just be like, just fill your role, and you'll have support. You'll feel like, oh, I don't need to worry about this. Popovich is going to take care of it, or I don't need to worry about this. Kawhi's going to get it. It's perfect. Go to San Antonio. Go save yourself. Because, like, this team is not going to get it together. And I realize this because I kept thinking, like, oh, they should keep it together because you could have, like, the 2011 Mavericks season. Except the Mavericks changed things around. Like, Josh Howard was gone, and they brought in Jason Kidd, and then they brought in Caron Butler, and then they brought in Tyson Chandler. Like, they had all these changes. The Clippers are going to have those three dudes forever. And that combination has not worked well enough. It just hasn't. Even when you got a great shooter in J.J. Redick, hasn't worked well enough. I'm begging you,
Chris. Is there a world where they sign and trade Blake and got like, wings, ooh, shooters, young players? I don't know. Like, it seems
Indiana?
I mean, what do you want from Indiana? Like
Paul George.
I don't think that's happening.
Well, I think with Larry Bird stepping down, there's a good chance it is.
Blake Griffin for Paul George. I mean, sure. I mean, if I'm the Clippers, I do that, and I don't even have to think about it. Of course, I do that. I don't know if that's an option.
If you're Pritchard, if you're GM of the Pacers, Pritchard, don't you say, no, we'll do it. We'll do it. And you don't even have to give us a pick this year or next year. I know that you already sold them. I want your 2021 first round pick and your 2022. You do the Nets deal. Like that's.
But this is entirely dependent on Blake Griffin signing up to be like the face of the Pacers for the next 5 years, right. Which is the difficult part of this whole scenario. Because I don't see that
happening. Okay. Excited. Big night games. James, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.